Welcome to The Bridge, a weekly magazine show featuring local and regional stories. I'm Kathleen Morgain. In the midst of the 2007 Great Coastal Gale, Astoria Mayor Willis Van Dusen was one of the officials who frequently came on the air here at KMUN to update citizens on the extent of the disaster throughout the area and to tell people about the locations for emergency services and supplies. Some months later, he and the Astoria City Council honored Coast Community Radio by proclaiming an honorary KMUN Radio Day. Now, some years later, it's the people's turn to honor the mayor for his decades of service. And in just a few minutes, Robert Jake Jacob and Sean Fitzpatrick, both working on the restoration of the Astoria Armory Building, will tell us about the Mayor's Ball, taking place Saturday, October 4th at the Armory. They'll both be here live in the studio just after NPR News headlines next. The time is 9:01. You're listening to The Bridge on Coast Community Radio. I'm Kathleen Morgain. Willis Van Dusen has been in public office for more than a quarter of a century, mayor of Astoria for 23 years. Before that, he served 6 years on the city council. He announced in July he won't be running for a sixth term as mayor. The face of Astoria has changed under his watch. Visitors and residents now enjoy riding the trolley and walking the Riverwalk. The Mill Pond at the east end of the city now sports new homes, and the downtown core has gained new life, including the recently dedicated Garden of Surging Waves. Before he leaves office, we'll all have a chance to honor his years of service and enjoy a good party in another Astoria landmark, the Armory. The Armory Building will be the setting for the Mayor's Ball a week from Saturday. It's going to be a lot of fun and a good reason to get gussied up and get out. Here to tell us about the party is Sean Fitzpatrick, a board member of Friends of the Armory. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thanks for having me on.
Well, Mayor Van Dusen has been in office a long time, and the face of Astoria has indeed changed. And a lot of that has happened maybe under his watch. We talked earlier about his facilitating some of those changes.
Yes.
But, a lot of what we love about Astoria and this area is brought to us because of volunteers.
Yes.
And this party that's happening just over a week from now is also primarily being put on by volunteers. And you are one of those as a board member of Friends of the Armory.
Yes, I am.
Could you tell us a little bit about how this organization came to be and what the status is now in upgrading and restoring the Armory to public service?
Sure. To start with, our group is a nonprofit. We are working towards a 501c3 status. When the word got out that the Maritime Museum was going to sell the building, there are a few people that were interested in buying the Armory and doing something with it, trying to figure out a commercial venture that might work in there. There was a small group of people that decided it might be better to reopen it to the public as a community asset. And that was handled before I got on board. I found out that I was going to be involved at a downtown association meeting where Robert Stang and Jake were making a presentation to the downtown association. And Mr. Stang happened to mention that I was going to be involved as well, which I thought that might be interesting. And then after that, people started asking me, well, what do I do? Or asking me for all sorts of information. I'd never even been in the Armory at that point, other than a brief tour a couple of years ago.
Well, when you first stepped into the Armory, what did you see?
Potential. It was it had been a holding station for things that should have been taken to the landfill several years ago. And I'm talking about the main gym floor, not the lower level where they had the artifacts stored, but the main gym floor where we do the roller skating and indoor soccer, broken desks, pamphlets for events that had happened several years ago, things that people just didn't seem to think they could let go of right away. We hauled a lot of that out. The Maritime Museum hauled a lot of it out. We have some photos in the lobby of what it looked like when we were given possession with stuff, to put it nicely, in the building. And the nice thing was we were given, by the time we were given possession, which was last June, 6 o'clock on a Friday evening, we were given keys, and that Sunday morning at 10 o'clock, we had children roller skating on the floors. And while those children were roller skating, we had a large group of volunteers, including several members of the Shanghai Roller Dolls, cleaning up pigeon droppings in the upper level. And another group of community volunteers that wanted to see the armory open, scrubbing walls, painting, that sort of thing. By the time we had our first event there, that was 20 days after we had started our cleanup, and people wouldn't have recognized it after the transformation.
Now, for people who haven't seen this building, it is one of the largest venues in the area.
Yes, it is. The Maritime Museum, and speaking of people not seeing the building, the Maritime Museum did a very good job in camouflaging or hiding the building. They didn't want people to notice it, didn't want it to be... they didn't want anyone to break in there. They didn't want people to know that it was there. They had some very valuable items in the basement. So it kind of disappeared. And the number of people that ask, well, where's that located? Or I thought it was torn down. And even people that work at the hospital that drive past daily didn't realize that it was there. We still have to remedy that on the outside. We need signage, and we need to do a few changes out there. But the inside people would not recognize. Beautiful building, from the hardwood floors on the main floor to the lamella roof, which is kind of a domed roof over the playing area there. It's just beautiful, and it's very useful as well.
This used to be essentially a sports arena. Kind of sporting events were held there?
Yes. Yes, in addition to concerts, and from what I understand, they had all sorts of home and garden shows, type of things that we're going back to do there.
Well, for those who haven't seen it, you will have a chance to get dressed up in your finest 1920s gear, because this party on the 4th to honor Mayor Van Dusen is going to be a Roaring Twenties theme. That's...
Yes, and we chose the Roaring Twenties theme because that was the rebirth of Astoria after the Great Fire of 1922. We saw it as the rebirth of Astoria. In the 60s, 70s, and into the 80s, Astoria was on a downhill slide. And from the time that the mayor joined the city council and eventually became our mayor, the town has been uphill the whole way. And we really didn't want to do an 80s theme. Some of us lived through it. Some of us have seen the pictures. Nobody wanted to be a part of that. We figured a 20s theme would be more interesting, more fun, and something that people might be willing to get dressed up for.
Well, we are out of time once again. The Mayor's Ball is taking place Saturday, October 4th at what time?
6 p.m.
Okay, and get on board, honor Mayor Van Dusen for his many years of service, and just have a good time in an Astoria landmark that will be seeing a lot more use in the future. You've been listening to Sean Fitzpatrick, a board member of the Friends of the Astoria Armory. Thank you so much for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having me.
And now another mayor's story. 6 months ago, the eyes of the nation turned to the devastating landslide near Oso, Washington. Dan Rankin, the mayor of Darrington, spent countless hours then working with citizens and emergency responders. The work has hardly let up since then. Rankin spoke about his experiences to KUOW reporter Posey Gruner.
There's so much that you get out of living in a small community, because it takes all of you. It takes the lumberman, it takes the Forest Service, it takes the dock, it takes all of us to make the community a whole entity, and you know all those people. By the same token, what that means is that you can go to 4 funerals in a week. That Saturday, I was actually going to do a home project, and I went off to the hardware to get some stuff to work on the project. And getting ready to check out, the card scanners weren't working and the phone lines were down. And everybody thought it was odd. And then somebody, you know, came in and said that there was a house in the middle of 530. And that didn't make any sense to me. And so I turned around and headed down to Skaglen's Hill and to Hazel. And there was a house in the middle of the road, but you could not understand which house it was and where it came from. It was like being dropped somewhere else where your bearings and the things that you knew weren't normal. At that time, especially in those first few days, there wasn't time. I did not stop moving. I did not stop seeking information. I did not stop talking to people, whether it was our governor, whether it was media, where it was individuals and citizens in our community. I had to make sure that things weren't falling through the cracks. People weren't falling through the cracks. But it doesn't, you still don't feel like you've done enough. And before this slide, I would spend probably 6 to 15 hours a week as mayor. I was dedicated to the community and this valley, but I had to also work. I had a very physical job. I ran a sawmill. And my life now is meetings. I'm behind a desk. I'm making phone calls. This is my life right now.
That was Darrington, Washington Mayor Dan Rankin speaking with KUOW's Posey Gruner. The Oso mudslide claimed the lives of 43 people and changed a community forever. Now, KUOW's Phyllis Fletcher brings us the story of Bob and Julie DeYoung. Bob helped recover bodies of friends and neighbors killed in the landslide. His wife, Julie, took care of people who survived. Today, they're figuring out how to take care of their own needs. This is their story in their own words.
You're going through a lot of pain, and I don't know how to make it better.
The most difficult part is driving through it daily. That's the hardest part. My name's Bob DeYoung.
Julie DeYoung.
I'm going to interview my wife.
I'm interviewing my husband about the slide in Oso, Washington. What happened when you heard of the slide?
Well, we came home for a day and tried to go down to help and got turned around from the officials until we got the next day with my buddy Quinn and got access to go in and help. First couple days we were in there, we recovered bodies right away that were on the top. There was just a few telltale signs and minimal digging to expose the bodies. But after that, I brought in all my heavy equipment and assisted digging up all the targeted areas where they thought bodies were going. And then brought my log skidder in at one time to help break up the log jam so we could get some of the water to drain off. And a host of guys were digging ditches and that type of thing to make that happen. After the slide had happened, what did you do?
I immediately just started praying for everyone. When I finally knew what, you know, was going on, then I just started cooking and baking, you know, because I knew people would need food and they really needed me in the kitchen at the community center. There was a lot of other sweet ladies, you know, up there cooking.
You're the dynamo. You're the energizer bunny, taking care of everybody and keeping half a dozen people in the house during the whole time of the slide and then cooking for 400 or 500 people. Pretty cool.
What do you want people to understand about what everyone's been through here?
The biggest thing and the overriding thing is what God has shown he can do in recovering every lost person. 8 survivors and 43 people have been recovered or found just because of the know-it-all mostly. Great help from the fire crews and the FEMA guys, but local knowledge on how to use heavy equipment and what to do and how to make things happen. What disaster do you know of where they find everybody? It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. Even the FEMA guys says they're going to be writing books about you guys for years because of what you guys have done out here. I don't think people realize how big of a deal that is to find everyone.
I'm proud of your heart and how hard you worked and the hours you did. You know, I only saw you for 5 minutes in the morning to feed you, and late at night you'd come home just wore out, tired and broken. But I'm proud of, you know, how hard you worked. In the past few months, what's been hard for you to see in me?
Your reaction to me sometimes. Together we've gotten some grief counseling, which is good. Yep, I think it's helping slowly but surely. It's better than sitting at the bar, that's for sure.
What do you think we should do now?
Get used to the new normal and be patient with each other. Just listen.
Both of the stories you just heard from Oso were produced in collaboration between public broadcasters KUOW and KCTS9 in Seattle. You're listening to The Bridge here on Coast Community Radio, 91.9 KMUN Astoria and 89.5 KTCB Tillamook. I'm Kathleen Morgain. Still ahead, Republican Dennis Richardson is challenging incumbent Oregon Governor John Kitzhaber for the state's top political office. He acknowledges it's a tough battle.
The question often comes up on how I will actually win. You know, how can a Republican from Southern Oregon win in a democratically dominated state?
Salem correspondent Chris Lehman brings us up to speed on both the Richardson and Kitzhaber campaigns. That's coming up right after this weather break. Here's the National Weather Service forecast for the Lower Columbia Coastal Region today. Partly sunny with isolated showers this morning, scattered showers and a slight chance of thunderstorms this afternoon and evening. Highs 65 to 70. Gordon McCraw, meteorologist and director of Tillamook Emergency Management, says a trough of low pressure is sliding across the area today into tomorrow, bringing showers and a slight chance of thunderstorms. Saturday will be between systems as the next front is forecasted later Sunday into Monday, with lingering showers expected behind that front into Tuesday. The long-range models show a ridge of high pressure building in after that. Highs continue around 70, though the front on Sunday could lower daytime highs into the low 60s. Lows stay in the low to mid 50s. The race for Oregon governor is a battle between two political veterans. Incumbent Democrat John Kitzhaber is seeking an unprecedented fourth term. Republican Dennis Richardson is hoping for a promotion from his long-held seat in the Oregon House. Salem correspondent Chris Lehman brings us some background on both candidates and reports on what each has to say about their current campaigns.
Both Kitzhaber and Richardson have spent many years in the public eye. That means it's pretty easy to find archival tape of each of them. So I'm going to play an old soundbite from both of them to help you understand who they are. Let's start with Dennis Richardson. And let's go back 7 years to a 2007 debate on the floor of the Oregon House.
House Bill 2201 relating to health appropriate money prescribed.
House Bill 2201 would have expanded health coverage for low-income Oregon children. Richardson rose in opposition to the measure. It wasn't that he was against keeping poor kids healthy. Instead, he didn't like how the program would have been paid for. It was an 85-cent hike in the cigarette tax. Richardson laid out a detailed case for why he didn't think that would work. And then he started doing imitations.
And so the message is, everyone, start smoking. After all, it's for the kids. And so you'd be lighting up.
Why are you doing it, Joe? You already lost one lung because it's for the kids.
Maybe the speech helped. The bill died on the floor of the House that day. It was a rare win for the GOP that year in Salem. Richardson is used to being in the minority party in the state capitol. One exception was 2011, when Republicans and Democrats were split evenly in the Oregon House. And that brings us to our next piece of archival tape. It was 2 days after the 2010 election, and John Kitzhaber finally held a big enough lead to allow him to declare victory.
An election as close as this one gives us an historic opportunity to create that kind of operational political center that cuts across partisan lines and allows us to view problems through the lens of our shared values and our shared future.
That all might strike you as political gobbledygook, but the concept of a so-called operational political center is something Kitzhaber seems to really believe in. He still talks about it 4 years later when you ask him why he should be reelected.
The reason I'm running is because I believe that we have found a way to create an operational political center in Oregon. It's not about Republicans or Democrats. It's about getting results. And we did it together. And we have a huge opportunity going forward to move the ball even further down the field.
Kitzhaber points to Oregon's economic outlook. It's much brighter than when the governor took office 4 years ago. He says he deserves some credit for that, as he proposed tax incentives meant to persuade some of the state's largest companies, Nike and Intel, to expand in Oregon. He also takes credit for expanding access to health care in Oregon, even in the face of the botched rollout of the state's health insurance exchange website.
The most important thing is we never took our eye off the ball.
If you've been following Oregon politics over the past year, it will probably surprise you to hear the governor use Cover Oregon as an example of why he should be given another term. Taxpayers shelled out some $250 million for a health insurance website that never has worked right. The episode has resulted in lots of finger-pointing and counter-lawsuits between Oregon and its technology vendor, but Kitzhaber says despite it all, Cover Oregon still managed to produce results.
This isn't just about a website, it's about covering Oregonians, and we covered just under 500,000 people, reduced the rate of uninsurance to 5%. Think about that. If someone had said a year ago, only 5% of Oregonians will not have health insurance coverage, I think people wouldn't have believed it.
Kitzhaber is a former ER doctor who was elected governor twice in the 90s after a lengthy stint in the Oregon Senate. He says this will be his last election campaign, win or lose. He's staked out a healthy fundraising lead, and no Oregon Democrat has lost a race for governor since 1982. That would appear to make Dennis Richardson's quest, well...
The question often comes up on how I will actually win. You know, how can a Republican from Southern Oregon win in a democratically dominated state?
Richardson is banking on Oregon voters being tired of Kitzhaber. He says the Democrat was asleep at the wheel during the Cover Oregon meltdown.
It's not about personalities, it's about realities. And the reality of this administration is it has been a failure, that he may be a great doctor, I don't know, but he's not a good leader for the state of Oregon.
Richardson says he'd reach out to Oregon's international trade partners and would take a more hands-on approach to state governance. He says he'd take up residence in the governor's mansion. Kitzhaber spends more of his time in Portland than in the state capital. Richardson has taken some heat in this campaign from liberal groups that say the Republican is too far to the right on social issues for most Oregonians. For example, he's spoken out against gay marriage and abortion rights. Richardson says, yes, it's true, he's a social conservative.
But my focus is on our education system, on our jobs, our economy, and on transparency and accountability in government.
Richardson says he'd enforce Oregon's laws regardless of whether he agrees with them. But to do that, he needs to break his party's 3-decade streak in the loss column. I'm Chris Lehman in Salem.
That is all the time we have for today's show. The Bridge airs weekly, Thursday mornings at 9. If you joined us late, you can listen to a podcast from our website at coastradio.org. Just click the program box on the home page. We welcome your comments. Call us at 503-325-0010 or email to news1. That's NEWS, then the numeral 1, at KMUN.org. I'm Kathleen Morgain saying thank you for listening today. Listen in again next Thursday for the next edition of The Bridge. The Bridge is a production of Coast Community Radio.